point at it up there at the podium. First of all, I'd like to say, while I'm on this slide, is get a couple definitions out for you folks, because I want to make sure that you know what leptin is and what zopatterol hydrochloride is. Leptin is a polypeptide hormone, sometimes called the fat hormone, secreted by adipose tissues. It is controls appetite. That's the biology of the molecule. As fat deposits build up in the animal, and leptin's been discovered in all mammals, humans included, the levels of leptin build up and go to the brain and try to regulate appetite. I like to say in humans we can resist this quite effectively, and a very promising avenue for obesity research was cut off by the fact that humans can resist the signal. The gene, however, is called the obese gene, and it was first discovered in the mouse, and some of you probably have seen the obese mouse where they knocked out the obesity gene, and in the same litter you had a huge fat mouse and a regular-sized mouse. They just overeat and can't regulate their appetite. In cattle, that gene is also exists. It's been known for some time, and interesting enough, there is a not uncommon, I say that, a frequent frequency of existence variant allele in cattle. It's so much that it's almost equal numbers in cattle for two different alleles. The variant allele, this is caused by a nucleotide substitution within the coding region of the gene itself, a C to T transition, which causes an arginine to cysteine amino acid change. So this is a functional SNP within the gene itself that changes the amino acid structure of the protein. The C allele is considered the wild type or normal allele, and the T allele is considered the variant, basically based on the biology of the animal itself. The T animals tend to not have this appetite effect that you would normally expect if you believe the biology of leptin. All right, I think that's what I wanted to say about leptin. Now, zopatterol hydrochloride is marketed under the name of Zomax. It is a beta agonist growth promotant that's been on the market for about 2 years. It's in the same family, but not the same receptors as rectopamine, which we use in cattle called Optiflex. Zopatterol is a much more potent drug than Optiflex. Zopatterol causes, as administered in cattle, as Optiflex is, at the very terminal part of the feeding phase. Typically, we use it 20 to 21 days of feeding, with 3 days of withdrawal at the just before the cattle go to slaughter. Optiflex, I think today, is probably being used at more like 28 days from slaughter, no withdrawal. Zopatterol is much more potent, gives both live weight and carcass weight gains, more carcass weight gain than live weight gain, and I didn't say that wrong. The dressing percentage goes up by nearly a point and a half. It increases lean mass tremendously. It changes the yield grade proportions tremendously, but it also impacts marbling. Zopatterol reduces the amount of choice cattle that you'll get out of a pen. So what we tried to do was take a look in one experiment, and it takes me a while to get through this, so give me a little bit of time. And by the way, this Cactus Feeders has a research subsidiary called Cactus Research. We did this in our facility, and our trial sponsor was Quantum Genetics of Saskatoon, Canada. The gentleman that designed the experiment and did the analysis works for me. His name is Paul Defor, and Lee Marquess is the chief scientist and the principal in Quantum Genetics. We tried to test two things in the same trial. We wanted to determine whether the different leptin genotypes, there are three, with two different alleles, there's the CC cattle, which would be homozygous for what we would call the wild type allele. There's the CT cattle, the heterozygotes, and then there's the homozygous cattle, TTs, that would be the double variant. We wanted to know if we would get different carcass characteristics on those cattle we killed them on the same day. And then we wanted to know what the genotype, if there would be an interaction between the genotypes and the administration of zilpaterol in response to growth and carcass characteristics. This here was an attempt to try to discover whether we could find a pharmacogenetic effect. These are quite well known in human medicine. That's why when you go to your doctor and he's trying to control your blood pressure or your cholesterol levels, the first drug doesn't always work. He tries different drugs on you, etc. There's lots of drugs as far as the metabolism and the cytochrome P450 system as far as breakdown, give strange metabolic products, don't give the right metabolic products. So there's lots of history in the human medicine literature that says that genetics affects the outcome and the response to different drugs. We wanted to know if a growth promoter in cattle would have the same possibility. So we designed a simple 2x3 factorial randomized block design. Realize there's not many of you here that are card-carrying cattle feeders. I see Bill over here from the previous session. This is an experiment not designed by geneticists. This is an experiment designed by cattle feeders and nutritionists. 2x3 is with and without zilpaterol by the three different genotypes. Here's how we put the experiment together. Here's how we built each block. We took about approximately 900 steers for each block, and we took DNA and sent it off and got it genotyped. When the genotyping came back, we built six pens of about 90 head each, of which there would be two pens each of the three genotypes. The TT allele is, at least in our experience so far, was a little underrepresented from a perfect one-quarter, one-half, and one-quarter. It's about 23%. So there's almost exactly 50% heterozygotes and 27% of the CC alleles. So we randomly picked cattle out of these populations to populate each of the pens that went on trial. For instance, here in the CTs, there were way more cattle than we needed, but we only wanted pairwise comparison, one pen each. We measured back fat with ultrasound on arrival, which was the day that we took the genotype, or took the DNA for the genotype, 65 days on to feed, 1 week prior to the zilpaterol initiation, which would only be one of each of the pairwise pens, and 2 to 3 days prior to slaughter. We did this 8 times over in about, so there's 8 different blocks, about 6 months of cattle. So the cattle were not related whatsoever. They were seasonally through whatever was cycling through the feed yard, the cactus feed yard. Most of the cattle came out of the Oklahoma sale barn. This totals nearly 4,200 cattle going through the trial. The initial weight was averaged 875 pounds, plus or minus about 3 pounds. So we got very good initial weights going on the trial. And each block was killed for an appropriate number of days for that block, as estimated by cattle feeder by our cattle schedulers. But we averaged about 129 days on feed once we got them on trial. It took about a week to 2 weeks to get the genotyping back. Differences in several carcass traits were detected among the leptin genotypes. And I'll just read this. Some differences observed did not depend on zilpaterol status, but some differences tended to depend on zilpaterol. These would be the drug interactions that I'll get to in a moment. Let's go through a few that didn't depend on zilpaterol administration. The TT cattle, and this had been published before, the work done in Canada, the TT cattle were fatter than the CC cattle, as evidenced by their back fat depth at slaughter in the carcasses. Interesting enough, this half-inch difference here to 0.47 is exactly what we got, the same magnitude as we got with zilpaterol itself. Remember, this is a very strong drug that has a very good p-value for different causing differences in back fat thickness. We got the same p-value across our different genotypes, TT cattle or fatter. Our ultrasound showed the same thing. The TT cattle are in yellow, and although there's very little difference towards the beginning of the feeding cycle, as the cattle get fatter, the TT seems to accelerate in deposition of fat over the heterozygotes and the CC cattle. This would also match with the biology that says this would be a phenotype that would be most dramatic towards the end of the feeding period. In other words, you have to have adipose tissue, have to have back fat there and marbling fat in order to get expression or levels of a decent level of expression of the leptin in order to even control the appetite. So what conceivably is happening is the CC cattle are trying to slow down their appetite and are putting on, slowing down the amount of fat that they put on. The TT cattle, which seems to be a less than functional allele, would ignore that signal and continue to put on fat and, in fact, continue to accelerate in their fat deposition. We also picked up some changes in consumption that I'll come back, or dry matter intake near the end of the feeding period. How big are these differences? They're small. At 14 millimeters, there, which is 0.55 inches, there's 9 days difference on those two curves. Cattle feeding is getting harder. We're going to try to find 9-day differences because, as you guys saw, it makes the difference in cutting your yield grade 4s in half and doubling your yield grade 1s. So that's the kind of game that we're looking at going forward, is much more precision than we've ever done in the past. Here's the yield grade 4. I got a little ahead of myself. If you guys forgive me, but the TTs had 5.3% yield grade 4s. The CCs only 2.7. That's very similar to the effect that we see with the drug alone. And on yield grade 1s, you can see, again, the TT cattle are fatter, this time manifested by less yield grade 1s. It's only 17.7% versus 26.4, not quite half. We see a very consistent, nearly doubling of the amount of yield grade 1s when we administer zilpaterol. In fact, if you can add in extra yield grade 2s. Now, each one of these are what they call simple effects, and that is there was no interaction between zilpaterol and the genotypes. So in another way to put that is we could make a blanket statement about either one, genotype or zilpaterol administration, and not be concerned about the effect of the other. In other words, genotype was, TTs were always fatter regardless of whether they got zilpaterol. Zilpaterol cattle were leaner regardless of the genotype. And that is the non-drug interaction. What I'm going to show you next are a few carcass characteristics where that's all out the window, where in fact there are differences that depend by genotype. So the way I wanted to try to set that up was to show you this same data graphically, and then that'll be the same graph that I'll use. So this is a repeat. This is yield grade 1s. And what you can see here is without zilpaterol on the left, and with zilpaterol on the right, we see that the TT cattle have the least amount of yield grade 1s, the CCs have the most. So we see that TTs are fatter than CCs. The administration is just 2 points on this graph on each line, but you can see the lines are parallel. So there's no disruption of that relationship as you move from with or without zilpaterol to with zilpaterol. By the way, we know that there is no interaction. The statistic says 0.90. Does everybody understand that this is the case where there is no interaction? Parallel lines. In other words, you can make blanket statements about genotype, regardless of whether you consider zopatterol or without zopatterol. You can make blanket statement about the administration of zopatterol, regardless of what genotype. In other words, the zopatterol effect is consistent. Here's a case where it's not. With marbling, or in this case, USDA stamp choice in prime, we start off with the expected case where the TT cattle are outgrading the CC cattle without zopatterol, but with zopatterol, the vast majority of the deleterious effect on marbling is absorbed by the TT cattle, dropping 20-21% grading points, and the CT cattle, while the CC cattle are maintaining most of their marbling. This was our first indication that we were seeing a difference in the interaction or response to the drug based on the genotype. And then this interaction has a tremendous p-value, as you might imagine, because now the lines are no longer parallel, they're actually crossing. So you can no longer make a blanket statement about marbling by genotype unless you answer the question, did you feed zopatterol? If you didn't feed zopatterol, you would be very confident that the TT cattle could outgrade the CCs. If you feed zopatterol, it's all upside down. The same result, this was USDA stamped. We got the same result. I'm just going to show you this first. These differences without zopatterol are statistically significant. So in fact, the word that we had heard in Canada that leptin TT allele cattle had a higher marbling propensity, had better grading, was in fact true. When we tried it our first time here in Texas, or back in Texas, on our zopatterol cattle, we didn't find it. And we said, you guys are wrong. But at least we went ahead and did the experiment, because what we discovered was that the drug was changing the response by the genotype. Okay, so how about marbling score? We had West Texas A&M did that for us, and you can see essentially the same pattern. The TT cattle would have had the best marbling without zilpaterol. They had almost a convergence between all three genotypes when you administer zilpaterol. And we got a decent p-value on that one also. The next thing I'll show you is an interaction based on hot carcass weight gain. In order to compute hot carcass weight gain, we had to take the initial weight on the trial and use a fictitious dressing percentage. And that was 58%. You could pick any number. It's just to give you something to subtract from the final carcass weight that you get in the packing plant. And in this particular case, there's a small difference but without zilpaterol, but the interesting point is that the TT cattle crossed over the other two lines. And in fact, there's a tendency for the interaction, just a 13 or 14% tendency, but it turns out to be worth some pretty good money. The response to zilpaterol varied by genotype, with TTs having the lowest response. The TT cattle gave us a 28.4 pound gain, additional pounds of gain due to zopatterol. So this would be zopatterol over the controls, whereas the CC and the CT cattle had a much better response on carcass weight. Turns out to be 7.4 pounds between the CCs and the TTs. This is actually the reason people use zilpaterol, is they get to sell more carcass weight. And it turns out that the best carcass weight gain is in the TT cattle, the cattle that didn't lose as much marbling. So why do we think we saw those interactions in quality grade and tendencies for interaction in hot carcass weight? This data actually came out after we put our abstract together. And I'll make a small complaint that most of the speakers at this meeting have lousy abstracts. But if you want to know what's in my talk, read my abstract. It's all in there. Other people, I go to their talk and I said, it has no relation to their abstract. They could have written their abstract a year ago. Muhammad had a decent one. Bill had a decent one. But some of the other guys, it's like they didn't want to tip you off, or they just got the data last week. But anyway, if you want to read our, if you want to know any of the p-values except for this next slide, they're in the abstract. And this has to do with dry matter intake during the last 24 days on feed. That's 21 days of zilpaterol administration and 3 days of withdrawal. Without zilpaterol, the TT cattle eat the most. Matches the biology. That's the one where the leptin gene is thought not to be functional. The CC cattle eat the least. But having fed zilpaterol to a lot of cattle, we know that we many times see a decrease in dry matter intake a few days after we start cattle on zilpaterol. It's usually about a pound. Some feed yards swear they don't see it. Other feed yards say it's every other pen of cattle, etc. But most people would agree that you could expect about a pound decrease in dry matter intake during the zilpaterol phase. Most of that is occurring with the TT cattle. They're losing over 2 pounds of dry matter intake when you feed them zilpaterol. If they're not eating as much, they're probably not going to grade as well, and certainly not give you the carcass weight gain. So at least from a nutritional point of view, this may make sense to explain those two aspects for the response. The last thing I'll show you in this regard is that we did get an interaction for ribeye area. The ribeye area on zilpaterol cattle is, people tell you, 1.2 inch or something like that, an increase over controls that don't get the drug. That varies by the genotype. The CC cattle increase the ribeye only by 0.9 inch. The others, the TT and the CT, increased it by 1.4 inches. Now, one of the knocks on zilpaterol is that it makes the piece size too big, carcass size too big, and the ribeye too big. The CC cattle have at least tried to moderate that effect in some regard, even though they've gained the most carcass weight and maintained the most marbling. So what could we conclude from these? These data would indicate that the leptin genotype and zilpaterol, and in some cases their interactions, are all significant factors affecting carcass income or outcome. Excuse me. Let me summarize, though. Without zilpaterol, the TT cattle, that would be the homozygous for the variant cattle, are the fatter cattle. They put down more fat faster, and they do marble better. Okay. In the presence of zilpaterol, it's the CC cattle that are of most interest, because they have the most carcass gain, they lose the least amount of marbling, and they blow up the ribeye the least amount. So depending on how you want to administer the drug onto the genotypes, it comes out to be very interesting from this particular data. So what I want to do now is try to change gears and talk a little bit for a few minutes about what management might respond to this. And the first thing I'm going to do is paraphrase Forrest Gump. Forrest Gump said, stupid is as stupid does. And people believe that was his idea of trying to say that even smart people do dumb things. I think a simpler idea may be that management is as management does. It's certainly in the feed yard, because there's only so many things we can do. We actually have a very small amount of options at our disposal. Once you buy the cattle, or you convince a customer to bring them to your feed yard, they're there. There's no decision to make. Once you consult with your vet and pick your health program, including your treatment, your vaccination and your treatment programs, that's pretty much over. And then you get with your consultant, your consulting nutritionist, and talk about whether you're going to feed byproducts, you're going to feed hay and or silage, what kind of roughage you're going to use. Your mill's probably so old that you couldn't possibly change whether or not you're going to do flake corn or dry rolled. So that's all done. So what's really left is just a couple things. And this is what feed yards do once they get the cattle straightened out, is they try to manage weight and fat, principally carcass weight and back fat. And heretofore, we've really only had, and Bill's attempting this too, but they really only have one thing that we've done heretofore, and that was to adjust days on feed. That's about all we could do. What I've shown you today is that we might be able to also use the technology such as a beta agonist in a differential manner based on genotyping. So the thought there is, one, the genotype, the leptin genotyping, can help us pick our days on feed, even if we're not feeding this. Let's take the case of not feeding a beta agonist. The TT cattle are getting fat faster. They need to go first out of the feed yard. The CC cattle are depositing fat slower. They're not grading as well at any particular point in time. They need to go longer. With the caveat, if they quit eating, you better kill them. And they're tending that way. But that would be the first application, which would be to use leptin genotyping to separate days on feed in the feed yard. The second one would be some sort of a differential application of beta agonists, which would be the data I've shown you today, would be zilpaterol. The CC cattle are the obvious candidates for administration of zilpaterol. The TT cattle are more dangerous in some respects. Black-hided TT cattle would be a crying shame to feed them zilpaterol. Are the CAB people here? I said that. Oh, thanks, Larry. That was for you. It would, you know, with this sort of information, you know, it'd almost be unjustifiable to feed black-hided TTs and CTs to zilpaterol. Because even when the choice selects, and this is another commercial for you, Larry, even when the choice select spread went to zero, they were still paying a premium for CAB and for prime. And the thought would be that those cattle have a chance to make those programs, and we know they have a black hide, and potentially, because they're TTs and CTs, they might even have some Angus blood in them. There's your opportunity. Now, in our feeding operation, we're very comfortable feeding all the cattle zilpaterol today. And the reason is, even the TT cattle, it pays. It's a powerful drug. You still get your 26 pounds, and you don't get 36 or whatever it is. You can give up your marbling. We don't get a lot of CAB. Maybe someday we'll start buying more black-hided cattle. And so today, we would probably side towards the fact that we really haven't made any mistakes feeding zilpaterol to all the cattle. But now we have new information, which makes the bar higher. With the bar this high, that we know what we're doing now, we didn't, when we feed it to TT cattle, I think the game has changed. So in our operation, we're planning on judiciously and most effective application of beta agonists, and we have trial work going on right now to see how zilpaterol interacts with these genotypes. So I'll end with acknowledgments. And there's the people back at Cactus Research, the people in Saskatoon, and then our carcass data did come from West Texas, Dr. Ty Lawrence. Thank you very much. Yeah. Questions? Are you talking from a breeding point of view or from a feedlot? Right. from a feedlot point of view, I think the technology will pay. We've got a trial going on now, similar to what Bill showed you this morning, where we're going to split cattle by weight, by ultrasound, and genotype, and try to administer zilpaterol and Optiflex differentially to the cattle. And we're going to try to come up with some economics. Bill's ahead of us in that regard. But what we've modeled would say that we could possibly make $20 and pay for the $10 test, which does include an ultrasound measurement, and get a nice return. We don't know what breeds mean in a feed yard, really. And it's kind of interesting because some of the the geneticists, the academics, have asked me whether or not this is just a breed effect. And we've gone out and we've tried to walk the pens, and we don't know what the breeds are. I mean, these are just crossbred cattle, and I don't mean necessarily eared cattle, but mixed breeds that don't seem to, in our opinion, we would never sort based on coat color or hide color, etc. And so if you're asking, do I care whether I'm getting straight Angus or straight Charolais or whatever, I'm just going to buy them all and sort them according to their genotypes and some of their phenotypes. I don't know if that answered your question. I don't think it drives towards more breed-specific cattle feeding. That's what you heard.
So basically you're saying you don't see a difference in frequency of genotypes and different breed types?
I haven't done that work. NBCEC has got some published data that says English cattle would be higher in TTs, continental cattle would be more in the CCs, and Boss Indicus cattle would be higher in CC also. In our population, that's almost nonsensical because everything's got everything in it. And we're just looking at a single gene. By the way, this is the anti-whole genome screening talk. This is one SNP within one gene. We don't have to worry about linkage disequilibrium here at all. There's no way that any recombination can get in between this gene and the SNP marker. This is the real thing. But to answer your question, we're not too concerned about that. If we found populations of cattle that didn't fit what we were looking for, say they were straight French Charolais with very little T alleles in it, then we just feed them zilpaterol. Got to feed them younger when they go to zilpaterol, otherwise they'll be monsters. And then if we had a lot of straight TT cattle, we just take care of them the same way. We just put them in a different management bucket. I think we really, I'm not making a recommendation on what people should do in their breeding programs.
But you are finding apparently those types of alleles in all cattle.
Yes. Yes. Very slight shifts. We've seen TTs in groups of cattle have gone blocks on trial from 20 to 30%, but that's very small shifts, in my opinion. Never seen straight anything. There, for some reason, these two alleles coexist in the cattle population almost equally and have given some advantage one way or the other, and you folks have not necessarily bred one out of the other one. You know, there must be some sort of a trade-off, whether it's marbling in the English cattle and growth and some sort of pasture-type response on the continental cattle. I don't know. It's a very interesting thing. We heard this morning that these alleles should have been bred out one way or the other. Frequency should go to zero or to one. And this one's about 50-50. Repeat that, please. I think what will happen, it's going to be a pain in the butt in the feed yard to feed two beta agonists. but I think the TT cal and the CT cal will get fed Optiflex. Most people have think the Optiflex doesn't affect marbling at all. It affects marbling one-third as much as Zilpaterol does. Zilpaterol reduces marbling score by about 20 points. Optiflex reduces it by 7. There is no free lunch, but it's obviously a less potent drug to use on the cattle that you're trying to maintain as much marbling as you can. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Dr. Inger. I certainly appreciated one of the comments you made about the economy getting the way it is. We got to pay more attention to the smaller, what we used to consider insignificant differences. So I remember years ago hearing a speaker that it's what had changed from the pork industry over to the poultry industry. Someone in attendance asked him what the difference was, and he said, we carry everything out to more decimal places. So I think we're getting there in the beef industry and having to watch those things closer due to the economy. But certainly appreciate all of our speakers today. Let's give all of them one more hand. I appreciate all of you and your attendance. I do want to remind everybody about the function and event tonight, that the buses will start moving at 6 o'clock out front of our hotel, and we'll rotate.